My name is Darren. I am at Mesa State College in Grand Junction. I've been doing student ministry there for 23 years. And about 10 years ago, about 10 years ago right now, it's at a pastor's lunch that our association does once a month, and, you know, doing my little Christian challenge, BSU report. And one of the things they were talking about there that day was what the missions committee at our association was looking at regarding some church plants. And I was sitting there eating my barbecue pork and everything. I was just listening to our director of missions just talk about these church possibilities. And they had all these areas, and you know, this affluent area in the north end of town, you know, out past the airport and big houses, and they thought they had some money for that and a great place to meet, and a really nice area over on the western edge of where we are, that again, big homes, newer neighborhoods, things like this, and sounds like it'd be a really great place to start a church. And they had again some people who indicated that they'd be a part of a core group out there, and another thing that was off in another section is a little further away, but again in a new neighborhood and very affluent. And then the last one they just kind of threw in is, and by the way, downtown, going to pot, you know, everybody's moving out of downtown and going out into the suburbs. There's property downtown, but it's run down and it's expensive. And, you know, the churches, not just the Baptist churches, but all the churches, were just pulling out of downtown and building new buildings in all these new neighborhoods. And he just kind of threw that one in, and I was just thinking, gosh, college guys would do that. Downtown is not far from where our campus is. And I just thought about it. I went back and I kind of mentioned it to a couple of our students. And got some immediate interest in starting the church. And as I talk about some reasons why God might be calling you to plant a church as a college student or as college students, I'll come back to some of this. But there was just some immediate interest. And I kind of went back to our director of missions, and I said, what do you think about letting some college students plant one of these churches? And he was like, which one do you want, you know? And I said, we want the downtown thing. And he couldn't believe that we wanted the downtown. And I'm not sure if that's even where he was interested in really trying first, because it was going to be a difficult place to begin a church. And, you know, single parents and you know, the drugs and your typical eroding downtown area. Since then, they've done a little bit to revitalize, but it's still it's expensive, and the buildings are small and things like this. But we went ahead and kind of got the permission to begin a church. And without going through all of the details, I'm just going to tell you that had 8 students in my family that committed to start the church. And of the 8 students, 6 of them were our Christian Challenge praise team. And the whole praise team was good to go on this. And so I remember our very first service, we had 14 people. And 6 of them were on the praise team, and they were up. And then 2 more that were out in the crowd wanted to be on the praise team. But so out in the gang that wasn't the praise team, it was my wife and 2 children and about 4 other people. And we started the church, though. We planted... you would call it basically a traditional church, but with college students. We just used college students to start it. The goal from the beginning was to develop a church in the downtown area where we were. Our campus is not quite downtown, but it's really close. So we began by meeting on campus because we could just get some free meeting rooms. And we wanted to kind of establish ourselves and get a little bit of a core group. And we met in those free meeting rooms. And I remember the deal was I was going to preach until we got somebody that really knew how to do it. And that hasn't happened yet. So we're celebrating our 10th year in August. And we started services on the first Sunday of the semester in 1998. And so we're going to be celebrating our 10th year as a church. In those 10 years, all 8 of those, or 6 of that first core group of 8 students, all 8 of those students have since gone on to plant other churches, which is one of the best reasons why college students planting churches is just a great idea, because you're going to want to do it again as you move from place to place. One of the young men that helped start that is in Siberia now as a missionary, and he and his wife are specializing in church planting. One of the young men who is part of that, and actually one of the young ladies got married, and they are in Calgary, and he is working with three separate church plants, and we're involved with two of those, his and then one of his daughter churches that they have going already. And everyone that was a part of that original work has now gone on to, you know, graduated from college and moved off and doing their own thing. And we sent them all over the place. And every time we lost one, we just couldn't believe we were going to be able to get by losing this person. We just how important they'd been and what they'd developed into. And, you know, they took responsibilities. I remember before we ever had our first service, we were talking, we're going to need a couple of Sunday school teachers, and that's going to be you and you, and we're going to need somebody to watch kids, and that's going to be you. And, you know, and the praise team had their thing figured out, and we're talking about what to do with offerings and, you know, how to account for those sorts of things. And and everybody had these responsibilities. And every time they left, we kind of developed something into our ethos, into our DNA that's been really helpful towards us. People have permission to move on from our church, even to this day. You have total permission to move on and God to call you elsewhere, but not before you recruit and train your replacement. And so we actually try to encourage people to recruit their replacement from outside of the church as well. So if somebody feels like God's calling them to, like when Nick was ready to leave and go to Canada, he spent a year preparing for that. And he had done so many things in our church that he literally had to bring three other guys into the church to replace what he was doing. He did that. And so even though we gave away our very best, he left us with a legacy of trained leadership. And so we've had this really great time in the course of 10 years. Our church has not grown to be incredibly large. Even last Sunday we had about 90, which in Colorado is not that bad, to be honest with you. I now have tenure in our association as a pastor. I've been pastor of this church for longer than any other pastor in our association has been at their church, so we have a sense of stability. We bought a building, which was amazing. The story about that is you know, worth its weight in gold from the beginning. Found this building downtown about a year into our thing, and we've been waiting for a building and looking for a building, and there's this little church that it went for sale on a Monday morning. And we've been trying to contact the people that met there, and we just couldn't find them. And went up for sale on Monday morning at 8. And one of our guys was on a bike ride. He literally saw him putting a sign in the ground. And so we called, and we were so lucky because we had called by about 8:15. And by 9 o'clock, the realtor had already received about 6 calls. But we were the first ones, and so they dealt with us first. I went in to check with the bank about a loan for this building. It was run down and small, and so they were only asking $90,000. But I mean, we're a bunch of college students, you know. And by then, we had a couple of young families that had been meeting with us and had brought some other people in, but needed $90,000, and nobody would loan us money because our church was just so small and unestablished. You know, what's your average monthly offerings? And $1,000 or so, you know, I don't know what we were taking in at the time, but the bank told us that they would give us a car loan for the building, but we had to come up with 25% down. So we had to raise $23,000, and I think we had 21 days to get the $23,000. And so we just had a prayer time, just said, if God wants us to do it, he'll do it, and you guys know the need. And it was so beautiful because we didn't even mention it. We met in the building. They let us use the building for the interim. We gave them all the money we had, which was a couple of $1,000, and that would apply to the down payment, or it was just our rent for the 2 months that we were going to be there. But we met in the building and went through those couple of Sundays and never even mentioned it again. In fact, it wasn't even a point of of prayer on the Sunday mornings, because we had already really put it out as this prayer request, and we said we're just going to see what happens. And on the day that the money was due, we had $23,000, and I tell you, it was the college students that came up with it. It was amazing. The couple of these families kicked in a little bit, you know, but it wasn't. We were kind of thinking, oh man, if these families don't come through big, then we're in trouble. But you know, those college students were probably averaged $1,000 a piece, and just they got it together, and we bought that building. And so our legacy is kind of, we've always remained small, but we started in the last 10 years. We started 12 other churches. Three have failed, if you want to say fail. I only think one of them is an absolute failure. The other two served their time. But we still have nine that are functioning, working churches, viable. Actually, about four of them are still in the early plant stages, but the others are off and running. A couple of them have been ethnic-type church plants that we started in our building, and they eventually found their own places and things. Others we've been very involved with. We've got one that we've worked on almost since the beginning. We've tried to plant a church in this little town about 10 miles away from us, and we've been working on that for 10 years. And it was our first one that we really started with, and it was barely going. But this week, a full-time pastor has come that is going to kind of take that over. So we've got this legacy that's pretty cool. There's only 90 people at church on Sunday, but we've helped to start plant a church in Belarus, for instance. And I know my sermons are podcast, and I know this group in Belarus gets together, and there's about 50 of them, and they'll listen to the sermon and have discussion. And so we've got those guys. We know that we're connected with these churches in Calgary. We know that we're connected with some churches around town that are doing some ethnic things. And it's been really exciting over the course of 10 years to kind of see how it's progressed. One of the churches that we started that lasted for 3 years was a church called Church 4.0. And that was a semester church. And that's one of the options that I kind of want to let you consider. Church 4.0 is a church that met on our campus. It was never intended to be a traditional church or to morph into a traditional church. It was meant to be the church on campus. The idea would be that we recognize that our campus is an unreached community and a churchless community. Kind of get, you know, just by looking, you can see that we have about 7,000 students, and of those, probably half, maybe even more than half, their only movement away from our campus would be to bars and liquor stores, to Walmart. And other than that, the campus is where they lived. It's entirely their community. And as a community, it was unchurched. And so we have the campus groups, you know, Christian Challenge and things like this. But one of the things I really want to stress, and this is my opinion, this is my belief, but campus ministry, Christian Challenge, campus crusade, any of these things are wonderful. I've done student ministry for 23 years. I believe in it, but it is not church. And church is elevated. It's above that. It's bigger than that. It's better than that. And it's really sad when our student ministry experience way outstrips our church experience. And one of the reasons I think planting churches is important is because I think we can bring back what church is supposed to be by doing it right, if it's not being done right around us. And so, you know, campus ministry doesn't offer some of the things that church, the body of Christ, needs to offer. And so, if you recognize your campus as being a closed community and essentially unchurched, even though it's ministried, you know, it's unchurched, you might be thinking that this would be a possibility as well, the semester church. 4.0 met any day there was class on Monday, we met the Sunday before. So if there was no class on Monday, we didn't meet that Sunday before. So summer's off, winter breaks off, during fall break or whatever, we just didn't meet. We met Sunday nights. That allowed people that were traveling to maybe be back in time for church. Some of the things that 4.0 offered that made it kind of unique was we offered dual membership. We encouraged students who were members at other churches to consider themselves to be members at 4.0 as well. And, you know, we would always kind of try to talk with their pastor and say, look, this is a story. Never had a pastor from any church I ever dealt with that had a problem with this, mostly because college students don't tithe that much. I mean, hopefully you're tithing, but churches aren't going to lose a ton of dollars. But we would ask them and say, let them figure out what they want to do with their tithe, if they want to do it to 4.0, if they want to do it to their home church, as long as they're tithing, that's good. But we kind of encourage 4.0 to collect the tithe and to do those sorts of things. And so you had that opportunity to give that in either way. At 4.0, we had a volunteer pastor who didn't want to take any salary. And so their tithes went almost entirely to mission projects and things like that. And they took some great mission trips. And so that was kind of fun to do that. We made sure that the ordinances were offered. We did baptisms and the Lord's Supper was a regular part of what was going on there. That's a step or so beyond what most student ministries are doing. We performed some marriages. One of the couples that's here this week was married through 4.0. The church took care of the whole thing, and the pastor there did the ceremony. And so it kind of elevated the experience in the eyes of the students. We were also very careful about separating it out from our student ministry. We didn't do common announcements and things like that. A lot of our students went to both. If they went to both, that's fine. But you know, and if through relationships they ended up coming over to our regular student ministry, that was fine. But we really tried to just let it be a separate thing. But 4.0 was great. It lasted for 3 years. We had some neat things. There were some people saved. We had some baptisms. We had some like I said, a wedding and a lot of really great stuff. Tough to keep the leadership going. I think we could have done it. We may restart it. But the pastor, the volunteer pastor we had a work change. And it just seemed like it maybe had run its course, at least for that time. Great experience for about 3 years, though. Might be something you might be interested in. I know the semester church thing in general is often considered to be a short-term thing. It might last through a season of leadership for students. It might be something that goes on forever. One of the values of that 4.0, though, is I know there was one young man who was saved through 4.0 and who did a mission trip through 4.0 who is now living in Canada and helping to plant a church there. And so even though 4.0 is gone from our campus, still kind of exists in what was happening there. So we look for those missional things. So that's kind of my story. I've helped to plant student churches in Belarus. I've working on a student church plan or two, some friends in some places in Canada. There's some really neat things happening in Canada this way. I'll talk about some of these other possibilities in a minute, but because of the way everything is in Canada, it's an incredibly right place for church plants, and these semester type churches or university type churches are growing into some of the most viable, best functioning churches in Canada, and they're completely entirely student planted and led, and so some of those opportunities might be good. Three reasons why you might think about planting a church as a student. I've touched on these. The first one is this: God might be calling you to plant a church or to get a group together to plant a church on your campus or near your campus because there's not an appropriate church situation nearby. In Belarus, it is impossible to find a functioning traditional church that is going to meet the quality of what student ministry has been in people's lives. When a student graduates from college, there's literally no place to place them. If you were to put them in a traditional church, they would just be swallowed up in the how closed off it is. They wouldn't be, you know, the people want to tame you if you come in with any fire or energy at all. And they just want to tame you sometimes. And as soon as you have no life left and they sucked it all out of you, then you're ready to be a Sunday school teacher and you just get in the grind and do the things. And unfortunately, there's a lot of places in this world where that is the situation. There is just not a healthy, functioning New Testament church in the nearby area. That's what's happening in Canada. You can go to the university in Edmonton and realizing this campus where there's nearly 20,000 students and this city of nearly a million people, there are no churches for people to go to, Baptist or otherwise. There might be a half a dozen and they might be an hour away or 45 minutes or impossible, you know, to get to without missing your campus meals or something like that. So that might be one reason, if there's just nothing there. Now, that's not to say that just because churches around you aren't perfect, that you can always change things better from the inside than from the outside. And so sometimes maybe God's telling you to stay where you are and fight to make it right. But if it's just not there, and God may be calling you to start something that's going to have a little bit of hope for people as they move out of this. I think the church that Brett Yon does at the University of Nebraska, same sort of thing as ours. They've grown to where their weekend attendances are sometimes, you know, nearing 1,000 people. A college church built at the beginning to meet a need that just wasn't being met by any churches in the neighborhoods and in town. So that might be one possibility. A second reason is this understanding that I'd mentioned before that your campus is a closed community and that it is essentially unchurched and that there are people, especially students, but there's in a lot of cases some larger universities, there are staff members and international students especially, who just are completely, their life is contained to that college experience, and they're not going to find church there. And recognizing that some churches will kind of venture into the community and bring people out, and they're doing some things, that's nice and it's good and everything, but I'll tell you what, when your community is unchurched, you feel unchurched. And when you're pulled out of your community into another community to be a church member, sometimes it doesn't ever feel as much like yours as it can. You always feel like a visitor. You always feel like you're the one being ministered to. That's one of the big points of starting church. And Bobby was kind of touching on this a little bit ago. It provides the opportunity for service, and it provides the opportunity to give and to literally be the church rather than just to be ministered to. And so if you kind of maybe have come to this understanding where, gosh, you know, these people just aren't getting off of this campus, and to have a church that's the campus church is kind of a good thing. So that might be a reason why God will call you to do this as well. The other reason is what happened with us. I mean, Baptists are divide and conquer by nature, and we're, you know, anytime, I guess there's some of us that really look to grow the church with 10,000 members, but you know, even our mentality has always been train people to go out and do this, because that small church experience we've found to be really valuable in the lives of people. And so it's not that we don't want to have a larger church than we already have, but we're just really excited when somebody comes and says, you know, I'm ready to start something myself. And so the third reason might be in cooperation with your fellow Baptists around, just to begin a church that's all, somebody has already kind of located a spot and has found a need. That's how we did Heart of Junction, as we responded to an associational request, and that did a couple of things. I'll tell you what, it elevated me, and which I didn't need it at a pride level, but I really did need it at a networking level. It elevated me in our association. Well, I'm not just a student guy, but I'm a church planner, and I'm pastoring this church. And when our church became viable, which it did very quickly, we just had a great group. And all of a sudden, we're planning churches, and you know, and they get the little newsletter, and we're out of 29 churches in our association, we are in the top half in associational giving from the very beginning. And not just in percentage, in dollars. Because we really wanted to set the pace in that. And all of a sudden, it's like people are like, oh, those guys are on the ball. They're great. It elevated me as a person, as a pastor. I serve as our state's vice president on our executive board in Colorado. You know, I get to go to these meetings where we have an $8 million budget and we're talking about things. And I'm one of the guys that gets to make calls on that stuff now because it just really changes the way people perceived us. But students in general, you know, those guys at the church, they think, oh, college students, you know, you got to feed them and you got to give them pizza and you got to give them movies and you know, and they want to go on mission trips all the time, but they never know what you're good for. And all of a sudden they see this and they go, these guys are amazing. And it very much changed the dynamic of our relationship with people around us. And really, you know, some of those people that were closed off to us just really opened up. And so, you know, any one of those three reasons I think might be good for starting a church. Now, I have some more things I want to share, but at this point, I want to just stop and say, is there anything about this that makes sense or doesn't make sense, or you just need a question or have a thought regarding? Those three reasons kind of make sense. Can you think of a fourth reason? These are my three reasons. I mean, there's not a book about this as far as I know. There might be more, but those are the ones that I've seen. I've kind of dealt with a lot of other guys that are doing this, and it seems like it boils down to one of these three. The worst reason, the fourth reason, I guess, is the worst reason, and not just because I hate church that I go to now. You know, it's fine to kind of be aware of the fact that where you are is completely inadequate. But you don't do something otherwise just to run away. God may be calling you to do something. Make sure it's Him, though, and not just your own, you know, I'm going to do my own, take my ball and go play on my own court because I don't like you guys. Make sure it's something other than that. I would say there's, as well, there's three types of churches that you might be thinking about planning. Heart of Junction fits in what I would just call the traditional mode. Now, we are not traditional in our methodology by any means. You know, it's as silly and innocuous as, you know, they're talking about the praise teams don't wear shoes anymore. I haven't worn shoes and I was preaching since the beginning. So it's as silly as that stuff, sandals and ties and you know, those sorts of things. From that level, clear over to the other end of the spectrum, to where you're really considering some pretty significant theological consequences and things. You know, for instance, in the Baptist world, you know, most people want you to prove that you're good to be a member of a church by really testing the credentials of your baptism. You know what I mean? And it's like, well, you got baptized at a church that's not Baptist. We're going to have to dunk you again, you know? And that's one of the reasons why people hate Baptists, you know, is because we throw stuff like that out on them. And you know, so we from the very beginning, we just done a thing where we have a lesson about what the Bible teaches about baptism, and that it does teach water baptism, and it does teach submersion, and the example of Christ, and so forth. But all we want to know is this your story? Or do you want to talk about doing it the biblical way? And if somebody says yes, I don't care if it was, you know, the Presbyterian church or the community church or whatever, you know, and so some of those things are a little bit tougher, but essentially we're a traditional church, and you know, if you went to our church on a Sunday morning, It would be what you would expect to see if you went popped into any church. We were entirely planted by students. We still have a student kind of emphasis. But if you come to our church on a Sunday morning, you will see the gray hairs, and you'll Grandma Betty takes care of our little toddlers ministry, and she's great grandma, you know. So we've got those types. We have tons of our youth group now. You know, we started this church with, I remember we had like first and second graders at the oldest when we first started, and now we have this youth group that has 20. Middle schoolers in it, and so it looks a lot like a regular church at that level. Sunday school church, Awana's in the middle of the week. Get on our website; it looks really traditional. Our methodology is not always the same, but that's one type of church to start. You may plan a church that the intention is to grow it into sort of a homogeneous neighborhood church, and it's going to fit a need of neighborhood. Another type of church that you could plan is what you just call a university church, where the intention is always that this is going to be a church that is about university. It's going to meet on or near the campus. It'd be open to everybody, but anybody that comes there is going to know that boy, there's going to be an awful lot of students here taking offerings and sharing specials and giving testimonies, and might hear some campus announcements. It's something that is a church that really focuses on meeting the needs of the university at large. And might be a church that ends up supporting BCM or BSU, whatever you call it, where you are, but it's going to be a church that is essentially a university church, but it's going to operate year-round. It's going to be a fully functioning church, just highly emphasize students and student needs. The third option is to start something like a semester church. There's some really great resources on the semester church thing from the Texas Baptist Convention. And if you just get on their website, look up semester church. In fact, if you just Google semester church, you're going to run across these resources. And the semester church is kind of what I talked about with 4.0. You need some good leadership there. And if it's going to continue, that principle of recruiting and training your replacement is vital. And that was the component that the guy who pastored that church kind of didn't develop into what we were doing there. And so he's a great guy. I love him. I don't regret having him do it or anything. But that's just the one thing that if they would have done that, we'd probably still be doing 4.0 right now. They just didn't train their replacements. And one semester, they all graduated, his job changed, and there was nobody there to be in charge of making it happen. So, but semester church has a good purpose as well. And I mentioned dual membership for semester church, by the way. We didn't encourage dual membership for the new believers that came into there. If eventually, you know, during the summertime, you know, they say, what do you do for church now? They said, come along with us. And they could find a new church experience. But we wanted people who were saved on campus to kind of recognize that the 4.0 was their church home. And we weren't looking for dual membership necessarily. We also didn't force dual membership on anybody. We wanted to make sure that people knew that because you know you're only having church 32 Sundays a year, that you kept your contact with your churches back home. So those are the three types. Some of the things that I think were helpful to us as we planted not only Heart of Junction but actually all of these dozen church plants that we've been involved with since. We always sought sponsorship. Now, when we planted Heart of Junction, we couldn't find a church who could sponsor us financially, which was okay. The church that sponsored us was at the very end of a 20-year financial crisis, and they just weren't in a place where they could help us financially, but they were an incredible help to us logistically and administratively, and they helped us to establish bank accounts and systems, and we would meet with some of their leadership on a regular basis. We'd let their pastor really speak into what we were doing. And this guy, I love him. He's a mentor to me, but he's very controlling. But you know what? When we asked for his help, he immediately became generous and what he kind of allowed from us, because he saw us reaching out for guidance and direction. He didn't force himself on us at that point. And we'd tell him, you know, we think we're going to try something weird here with this issue or that issue. And he's like, okay, give it a try. And he let us do all this stuff. And he wanted to know about it. And when it worked, I mean, one of the things we did was, we don't think we're going to do a whole lot in the way of business meetings. We're going to do one a year. And he's like, he's very oriented around his business meetings. He helped us to find this structure, and everything he complained about, we had to figure out ways to take away his problems. You know what I mean? And so the stuff he complained about were legitimate things. And as we discovered and worked on these ways to take away his concerns, we came to a place where once a year business meetings, and this highly administrative pastor that was part of our sponsoring church just gave us his blessing. And he said, if you guys can do this, it'll be great. And 10 years into it, he just tells us all the time, you guys are doing a great job on that. And it's nothing he ever would have done, but his input was invaluable. And so you seek a sponsoring church. If you're going to do this, find a church. Find some pastors that are going to sponsor. In fact, you may seek co-sponsoring churches. You may say, but we'd really like three of you to come, and for each church to have a representative that would meet with us once a month and just help us talk about direction and some things that we're missing and some things that you think are important that we're not doing. Not that you fight with them. You don't have to fight with them. You just can go in there and kind of take their advice and report back and tell them how their advice has guided you in this in particular direction and things. And so just seek that sponsorship. Sometimes you just can get, a church may be really interested, especially if you're doing this this campus thing where they realize that you can get a church to buy into the idea that our church doesn't exist in their community. And that instead of going out and trying to bring people out of their community and to place them in our church, really invalidates the missional message and ethos of what we want our students to be. We want them to be missionaries in their community on their mission field. Somebody from a local church, a pastor, might really buy into that. It's happened in our association. I was surprised, but they did. And they immediately said, you know what, we'll give you a couple of bucks to help this out. And so sometimes churches will literally help you at a financial level if they can buy into, you know, if your reason for doing it is more than just this will be fun or this will be a better church than what you guys are about. They recognize it as a legitimate plant in an unchurched community. Associations and state conventions, if they know what you're doing, they can be great resources. Here in Colorado, we take state missions offerings every year, and those state missions offerings are available to be dispersed in different ways. When we started 4.0, we made a financial request, and boy, when you start explaining what you're doing on campus, the people get excited about that. And our request, we needed $2,000 for a laptop and an overhead projector, and for PowerPoint stuff. And then they gave us that. We decided we couldn't do a campus semester church. If you're going to do that, you got to have somebody that's going to do the web thing. It's got to be a part of it. And we had Church 4.0, and then we had Church 4.0 Dorm Edition, we called it, which was this web-based kind of interactive thing that people could participate in. We got a sponsorship for that from our state convention as well. And so there's stuff available for that. When we started Heart of Junction, my church, one of the things that I had I was just going to pastor it to take care of the need, but one of the things that was made available to me from the very beginning was access to the Southern Baptist Annuity Board. And the retirement accounts and things like that. And there's a program out there to help church planners to actually have money placed into a retirement account for them over the course of time. And so, and as our church would just put a little bit into that, this is called the Holyfield Foundation, I think. They put a bigger chunk in, and they contributed to that for 5 years. And it doesn't sound like much, but if I were to talk to you about anything other than church planting today, I might talk to you about what money's your enemy or money's your friend. And it's only your friend if you got it working for you. And that's been a great help to me. And if you have somebody who wants to pastor a church, you can do that. North American Mission Board, Van Simmons would love to hear from somebody that wants to plant a church, and especially if he wanted to commit some time beyond college to do this. A semester missionary projects can last for up to 5 semesters. You can receive a stipend of $300 a month just for participating as a semester missionary. Make a commitment, write a covenant, and have a little bit of... that's not a lot of money. You couldn't live on it, but it's better than a poke in the eye with a sharp stick. And so there's some resources available to you. Financial level. Sometimes, if that's nothing that anybody's looking for, you don't have to apply for it or ask for it, but they'll help you. Another thing that the North American Mission Board offers is, I think it's still going by the name Basic Training for Church Planners. And that was the best thing we ever did, and we planted Heart of Junction. Went to a 3-day conference and really set out. The thing that I like about it is it allows each small group to answer certain questions, hear from God, and develop your plan according to how God is showing you how these questions are answered. And you can be in a room with 20 different church planners, and none of the final results look the same because it's all very tailored to your need, your situation, your campus, whatever. And that stuff is available. They'll pay your way, stay at a hotel like this or something, and you bring a small core group, and they'll help you out with that. Same thing, contact your state convention office on that and just tell them that you're thinking about planning a church. What kind of help can you get? And you will be amazed at how the floodgates just open up for you. If you're really planting a traditional church and you want to do that sort of thing, they'll send you your first case of hymnals. We've never had a hymnal in our church building, but in fact, as so many people in my church do not know that they're even singing hymns. They're completely unaware of it. But they'll give you a case of hymnals if that's what you want to use. There's just all sorts of resources. Those are some of the things that I wanted to share with you. Questions, thoughts, concerns? Anybody going to do this?
The semester church sounds realistic. Like, I know in my life right now, that just that yoga in general, very realistic. Semester church would be ideal. We have the First Southern Baptist Church, which is the primary ministry that a lot of students from Challenge can go to. But even that, at times,
Just Google that, okay? And I can't believe I came here without getting the guy's name. I might be able to remember it before we leave, but the Texas guys just have a great, I think if you Google it, you can find this thing. It's an Adobe file, and it ends up being about 30 pages. It's printed out, and it's just a total blueprint for semester church. A lot of freedom in there and the details. But just gives you some really good advice on what to think about and what to pull off. Just make sure that if you're doing semester church that you elevate the experience to church. That it's those ordinances. I can't tell you how important the ordinances are to do the Lord's Supper and to recognize. It really helps you to recognize that this is the body of Christ and not just my ministry group and things like that. But we are the body of Christ and we're together. You know, one of the things that's so important for me and what I understand about my life to be, Irwin McManus is the one who said this, He said, when God looks at you, he never, ever sees you as an individual. He always sees you as a part of the larger body. And not that he doesn't love you individually, not that he's not aware of you as an individual. The way we operate, though, is always as a part of the larger body. He just like if I'm sick, you don't worry about my liver. You know what I mean? You're worried about me. And that's how church is. And we are together, and it is such an important thing. It's the bride of Christ. It's meant to be elevated and protected and loved and honored and revered. And so I just encourage you at that level. Anybody else, any other thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Have you seen at all in your experience or heard of other experiences where there's been backlash because of that from the local churches? Just kind of like you're kind of taking students from.
Yeah, that was even what we did at the beginning was, you know, somebody told me, well, you just took 8 students right out of our church, and I was like, you know, really, you know. And my family, which was 4, but my family went to some. We were sent by our sponsoring church, was my church. But, you know, and only 2 of those students even went to the church. But, and so there's a tendency for people to feel that way. And it is a problem. I know the church in Nebraska, in Lincoln, if you were to go there and say, you know, go to most of the pastors in the association and say, what are the 3 largest churches in our association? They're going to tell you number 2, 3, and 4. They'll never mention the church there that's on the campus, even though it's far and away the largest church. And so there is that potential for that. I think the thing that helped us the most with that is we constantly sought this supervision. We asked for people to speak into, that's the term I always use. We would invite people to speak into our church process as we were beginning. And if I had a pastor complaining, I would say, you know what? Your complaints are valid. Those are fears that we have too. Can you have lunch with me and 3 of my leaders? And you know what? Before the meal even gets there, they're just right behind you. As long as they feel like you're not just running away from the whole thing. It's even 10 years later, though, there's still a little bit of that. So that'll always be a risk.
Something else that came to mind, and this is kind of something that's on my heart a little more, and partially why I came here, is I've had some different friends or different people who I've done ministry overseas with, or something like that, that they've had a group from their university ministry go somewhere in the church. And I know that you're talking about kind of usually in the same area, but it sounds like individuals from your church would go elsewhere and plant churches. Did you see where there's groups of them from your church that would go?
You know, we started with a core team, and that was, I don't know how you could do it any better than that. I don't think I could have done it by myself. I really needed that core team. As we've sent people, the most we've ever sent at one time is a couple or a family. But that's not been on purpose, really. It's when Nick and Serena, they were looking and when he kind of started to connect with Canada, you know, just over the course of about a year, it became obvious that that's what he was going to do. What we just took it as is, all right, now we're involved in Canada. And so we've become, our church now takes mission trips every summer to Canada. That's one of the beautiful things about, you know, the kind of the small church. And that's why our church is still kind of crazy in Colorado. People know about us. We're the goofballs. But we had church one day. We had 70, I think we had 74 people at church that day. And we don't usually count. But this day we were, just because of what happened. But had church, and then 32 of us, literally almost half of the church, got in cars and left right after church and drove to Calgary, did this bike festival, and we got back in time for church the next week. And it's like, we took almost half our church on a mission trip. We have sent from our church over 100 people overseas on mission trips. And you can do that in little churches. And you know what? We have never a single time had a fundraiser in our church for missions. It's you go on a mission trip, people go get a job or they do whatever they need to do because it's part of our ethos. And so that stuff is fun to see how it's worked out and how it's evolved. But the bottom line is that when it comes to sending people out, we kind of let God take out what he's going to take out. The one thing that I've noticed, is, and it's consistent with the New Testament, is he seems to send his best. And every time it happens, it's like, I'm as the pastor and as the guy who would really like for our church to get in the 300 range instead of 90, I would love to get a full salary. Every single time, it's like the best people we have. It's like, oh, I know it was going to be you guys. But that's what we do, you know. And I always say we want to start sending DNA, but we at this point, we still send body parts. We just chop off an arm and send it off to Canada. So now Canada's part of our thing. Siberia is part of our thing. If we ever had a small group that wanted to do that, I think we'd be all for it. In fact, if we ever... We've already talked a little bit about our building is kind of small and it's downtown. We've kind of talked about chopping the top off and leaving the stem, you know, leave a core group there. You know, just one day take 90 people, move them into another building and leave 10 where we are and let those 10 just do it again. So it could work either way. I know when we started Heart, having those 8 students in my family, that was so helpful. So I don't know if that really answers your question. I know a lot of the core teams. We've had teams come from Missouri and commit to like 2 years in Colorado, and they get this great thing started, but then 2 years ends and they all go back. I'm a little. Some of the guys that have been talking, Mike Story was talking about it. I'm kind of a plant your life where you are kind of. When I mentioned the tenure thing, I couldn't imagine. I've been offered other churches. I got a church in Michigan once offered to pay my student loans if I just go preach for them 1 week and be able to call. I almost did it, but I just couldn't. I'm not going anywhere. It's going to take a real weird thing for that to happen. So plant your life, and that seems to be the model of what's happening. Even the guys who have left 7 or 8 years ago to do other things are where they've stayed where they've gone to be. So I don't know if that's a dynamic that I hadn't thought about that much, but I think it's probably legit. Because we could get the rooms for free there. And we met in the first year. In our first 52 weeks, we met in 31, I think it was 31 different locations. And no, we were meeting in hotels and things like that. Because we could only get the meeting rooms during school time, you know, and things like that. So winter break, we're finding hotels and things like that. And it was kind of, I got to tell you, the worst decision we ever made, we met on Sunday nights, and when we got the building, we go, oh, now we can meet on Sunday morning. Sunday mornings, that was the worst decision we ever made. I think if we would have just stayed a Sunday night church, things would be a lot different. And it's not that it was bad. It just, we sure had a lot of people that appreciated Sunday night as really the focus of their church week. So we met all over the place, though.
When you start a church that targets college-age kids, what do you do
with let's say that again. What do you do with what?
When they all go home?
Well, that's where on a campus like ours, our summer classes are probably 10% of the enrollment we have during the rest of the year. And so that's why we chose to do the semester thing, is just because you couldn't maintain it. Now, the guy who was kind of pastoring that Church 4.0, who was a graduate about 10 years older than typical students, kind of had a career going. During the summertime, he just kept some email things going. And they did that Church 4.0 dorm edition, you know, which you didn't have to be in the dorms. It was just the joke for the website. But he kept in touch with people, but that was about all he could do. And so that was part of the reason why he really encouraged people to maintain that dual membership. And he wanted to know where you were going to go to church when you went home, and if you had a plan for being there and things like that. But if you have a university that has, like a CU, I think you could maintain a year-round type university church. You just knowing that the summer is going to be a lot different than the semesters. Some of the churches in Canada have that difficulty. So. When we started, the core group was mostly musicians, but they knew when we started that we were going to need to meet a lot of needs other than just the music. And really, at the very beginning, they were talented musically, so that was nice. It meant, though, that they didn't have to work on that very much. They could run through their set and be ready to go. But we asked for a commitment from the core group that if you're going to be a part of this, you know, if we're going to do this, can each of you commit to other leadership responsibilities beyond just the music? With the exception of the guy who we designated as the worship leader, we let him focus on that. But everybody else were doing other things, like playing the piano and, you know, going to handle any Sunday school for six. And I think we had Sunday school the first week for kids who were six and under, for kids who were over six. And then if you were in middle school or above, you were just with the adults. And that's just what we did. We had three people preparing lessons and things like that. And I remember it took a couple of weeks for anybody to show up for one. So go find some people to come to your class. That's what they did. We were having 30 or 40 people by about the third week. So all these jobs then became very exciting. But we had people, we decided there's going to need to be two or three of them that got together and talked about the finances and, you know, what are we going to do with it. And they didn't think we were going to have any. But then people started coming. They saw this church. They were tithing. I tithed into it. And so there's money there, you know. And what are they going to do with it? And so they had those responsibilities. We had a crew at our core level of college students who developed our constitution, and it took them a long time to do that because they were interacting with all these pastors who were giving them advice and a lot of advice, and they were trying to do our own thing and make it look like what we wanted it to be, So they all had responsibilities. But the core group at the beginning was students. The thing that was tough was, since we did the traditional thing, was inviting people that came into the church. We wanted to get them involved as quickly as possible, and it was hard to find jobs. But we found something as soon as we could for everybody that came in. So, guys, I appreciate it. My email address is simple. It's Darren, Darrin, at minister.com. And you can get a hold of me through the Colorado State Convention as well if you need to. But if any of you end up doing this, and if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. Even if it involves me getting in a car and driving out to visit with you or something like that, I do whatever I can to help college students plant churches. I've only mentioned it kind of in the context of the stories, but I have students all over the world now who are so mature and deep in their faith and doing so many things. And to one thing really quickly, I was driving to a campus about 90 miles from our campus, a mountain thing. The big major there is a marijuana, I think. But I'm driving up there and trying to do this Bible study, and none of the people who came to the study were believers. But I went up all the time. They'd eat the pizza and things like that, fight with me a little bit. This one girl got an internship in Madrid, working with photojournalism is the big thing at this Colorado Mountain College. And she got this internship for the summer and went to Madrid. And the first thing, when she got off the plane, the guy who was picking her up said, I would love to take you straight to where you're going to be as a Sunday morning. He goes, but I'm pastoring a home church, and I got to go do a message there. Because if you don't want to listen to it, you don't have to. If you want to sleep, you can. But you're going to have to go by the house, meet my family, do this, and then I'll take you to where you're going to live. And she goes, you sound just like Darren. And he's like, Darren who? this guy is out of our church. And she got saved that day. She's just going to believe the coincidence. And this guy, though, and I did not even know. He showed up for like the second year we were meeting. He showed up and he came to church, and he never really got involved. And you just have no idea. And then he goes off to Madrid and works as an editor at some English magazine there. And he's got a house church in his thing. He's pastoring it. And so, guys, it's so amazing what this can do in your lives and in the lives of students. And just encourage you to take advantage of that if you can. Guys, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Again, if you need me, email me. I'll be happy to help any way I can. Thank you.